Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 6th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. And then we'll continue our conversation with University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good. Friday, we talked to him about the very wide soybean basis. Today, we'll take up the carry in the corn market. Hey, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we always check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy on a Monday to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us for this edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby wheat in the September at $6.64 were up 14 cents. December at $6.83.5 up 14 and a half. And the March contract at $6.75 settled 13 and three quarters higher for the soft red. Corn pit now, September futures, $3.25 and 3/4, the settlement price down 0.75 cents. December contract at $3.43 unchanged. And the March futures at $3.59 and 1/4 were up 0.5 cents today. December for next year unchanged at $3.93 and 1/4. $8.26 was the settlement price for the nearby August soybeans. They were 13 cents lower. September's down 10.5 at $8.34 and 1/4. And November beans for this year at $8.50. They settled today 11 cents lower. Bean meal futures, August contract $2.2070, down $1.50. August bean oil at $36.54, and that finished 81 lower. From the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle at $116.25. They were up 32.5 for the day. August live cattle at $93.37.5 were down 22.5. And the October futures were down 27.5 at $97.70. August lean hogs at $74.57.5 were 20 cents higher. From the outside markets, nearby crude oil trading the September contract at $71.85, down $3.63. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,331, and it's just about 150 points higher at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange in the world of agricultural commodities is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it seems that since last Thursday or thereabouts and right on in through today, the United Kingdom has been suffering through what may or may not be an outbreak of foot-and-mouth disease. I suppose there is confirmed foot-and-mouth disease there. I don't know whether we want to call it an outbreak simply because it's on one farm, but it doesn't look like the Mercantile Exchange cared very much today.
Not at the moment here. The key would be if that would spread sort of a contained outbreak, so we'll see how the newswire carries that. What the trade is probably more concerned about in the Merc was especially the hogs, the large run-up we've seen here in the hog market on continued talk of pork business, China, them coming in and being a buyer of our pork. Today we saw some profit-taking, long liquidation take place. We also saw some commercial selling. The market's running about a $5 premium to where it should be this time of year, where normally we're at a discount. But if you take the October hog futures, they're at 75 cents. If you convert that to a lean contract, multiply that times 0.74, it suggests 55 cent cash hogs this fall, which is just unheard of, which is a windfall for the producer in through there. And that's probably why we saw some commercial selling taking place. But the main thing is to see if we do actually see confirmation of a Chinese buying of pork. If not, we probably could have seen the highs in the pork complex here. Cattle futures sort of held their own. We saw some late session spread activity more than anything. Mainly traders continue to roll from August on out to the deferred the October contracts. Need to see some confirmation of some higher cash trade We're looking at 92-cent trades. So when you watch the upfront here, August contract, as it winds down, those two will come together. But your October's at 97, which is about a $5 to $6 premium to where the cash market is at the present time.
Let's move from the Mercantile Exchange to the Chicago Board of Trade, where soybeans suffered a pretty rough day, down 13 cents in the August. November's were off 11. What was the news on the trading floor?
Well, some big rains in the northern belt and through Iowa, southern Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and through Indiana and portions of Ohio. Also, too, Malaysia palm oil was down sharply. And so that spilled over to our market. The overnight mark was about 14 lower. When we opened the pit trade at 9:30, before we knew it, the bean market was 20 lower. But it fought and ground and he-hauled around, and it was able to move back up throughout the session. Did not close higher on the day, but we were able to close 9 cents off the pit trade low and 10 off electronic load. So sort of a halfway constructive tone there, but the main thing is the weather and see how this August weather treats the bean crop. This afternoon's crop condition report is expected to show some additional deterioration of 1% to 3%. So the direction of the bean market will hinge on that report at 3 o'clock to see if there's more or less deterioration than that, Todd.
There are excessive heat warnings out for southwestern Illinois. That through Friday evening this week. A heat advisory in effect for southern Illinois and Indiana. Tomorrow, Tuesday evening, it's going to be hot, up in the 100-degree level, I think I saw, for actual temperatures in St. Louis. The marketplace didn't seem to be moved by that either.
Well, we'll be if that holds true for the rest of the week, and if the 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14 days continue to show above normal temperatures and below normal precip, there's still a larger percentage of the eastern belt here that's and on south, it's been missing some of those generous rains, and that could spell additional deterioration. Also, too, when you look at the extreme heat, even though you have moisture, it still plays havoc with the crops. So, we keep the temperatures warm and keep Chicago warm and back off of the moisture here. We're not out of the woods on the bean crop yet. There still could be pod abortion yet that could affect the bean market.
What do you think so far of the trade estimates that have been released for the Friday USDA crop production and WASDE numbers?
Well, we're all over the place. As far as the bean equation go, we're down in this 2.57 and up to 2.7. We'll see where the USDA comes in on the beans. The big thing is on the corn side of the equation. A lot of the trade speculating that the population counts are going to remain high and there's going to be plenty of ear counts and the ear weights are going to be there. So on this report, speculation is that we could probably be close to a 13 billion bushel corn crop. However, though, once this report's out of the way, we feel that a lot of these traders are going to be lowering their number somewhat in time. One observation is, we're seeing some wide variance amongst the countryside on what they're expecting from producers, that is they actually go out and do some surveys, and what we're finding is the rows around are coming in less than expected, a lot of 14 to 16s versus 16, 18s on ups. And so when you lose those rows, that cuts down the yield dramatically. And a lot of that's contributed to that dry June we had, Todd.
All right. Anything else to add before we let you go for the day?
Well, it's going to be an emotional roller coaster. From a trader's point of view, there's going to be some wide swings in through here. It looks like this December corn sort of developing some support at 330 with resistance up around 345. The bean complex, the way it sort of held that 840 area, suggests that maybe we could be range-bound here until the trade gets more comfortable with production prospects.
We appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grain Field Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Monday afternoons. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM 580's own Mike Sola says tonight across the two-state region will be partly cloudy and muggy. Scattered showers possible, mainly in the northern and central sections. Lows will range from 58 in the far north to 73 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy. In southern and central sections, partly to mostly sunny. Scattered showers and thunderstorms most numerous in the north. Highs tomorrow from 85 near Lake Michigan in northern Illinois to 100 in the far south.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Just a couple of items in today's agricultural news. Britain is dealing with a new foot and mouth outbreak following an investigation of suspected vascular disease by the UK's Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Animal Health Division. That on a farm near Surrey, England. Lab results have indicated that foot and mouth disease virus is present. On the basis of the initial lab results, Debbie Reynolds, who's the chief veterinary officer, has confirmed foot and mouth disease. In accordance with the legislation and contingency planning arrangements, all of the cattle on the premises will be culled and a protection zone of 3-kilometer radius and a surveillance zone of a 10-kilometer radius have been placed around the premises. The farm itself has been under restrictions since late Thursday evening of last week. And the U.S. corn growers appear ready to harvest a record crop of 12.64 billion bushels. That is the latest from the Farm Futures magazine, but soybean production could fall to 2.68 billion, the lowest level since 2003. The magazine estimates are based on the exclusive email survey of more than 600 producers conducted July 26th to the 4th of August, as well as some crop ratings published by USDA. The USDA releases its official estimate on August the 10th in one of the most widely anticipated crop reports of the year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says ethanol has a fascinating history.
Chemurgy was a term coined by chemist William J. Hale to mean the production of industrial products from agricultural raw materials. The word was more common during the 1930s and 1940s. In 1933, the American Farm Bureau Federation and its affiliate, Illinois Farm Bureau, touted the benefits of highball gasoline, a 90% gasoline and 10% grain alcohol fuel. The Illinois Farm Supply Company distributed the new fuel, and the results were impressive. After 54,000 gallons had been sold in Illinois for use in autos, tractors, trucks, and buses, the conclusion was that alcohol from motor fuel is not only practical in actual use, but it is superior to motor fuel now available. Experiments were going on in other states, too, and similar blends of alcohol and gasoline were sold under a variety of names. In the same year, 1933, the Agriculture Department may have been its first official endorsement of what would become ethanol. In response to a request by Congress, the department said the manufacture of alcohol from farm products would aid in taking care of farm surpluses and stabilizing markets. At the time, corn was selling for 50 cents a bushel, and gasoline was 13 cents a gallon. The price of corn is about 7 times greater today, and gasoline is 25 times more expensive at the pump. Farm Bureau wholeheartedly endorsed the use of farm commodities and agricultural waste in making alcohol and other industrial products. The interest had nothing to do with imported oil, high gasoline prices, air pollution, or the fact that we might someday run out of oil and need a renewable fuel. It was strictly another market for farmers and a little better engine performance for consumers. During World War II, the Allied forces were cut off from most of the world's natural rubber supply. A synthetic rubber required butadiene, a chemical base which could be made from either alcohol or petroleum. Alcohol was the choice. but after the war, the government decided to shut down its alcohol plants. American Farm Bureau Federation President Ed O'Neill protested the decision to the Office of War Mobilization and Reconversion and said farmers would need the alcohol plants if grain surpluses built up. But the cards were stacked against him. Petroleum interests stepped in, and the excuse was made that grain could be better used for livestock feed, for which a temporary shortage existed. Had the U.S. government backed farm-based alcohol as an alternative energy source in 1945, it might have changed world history, and grain surpluses might never have become a problem. In reality, it wasn't ethanol's time. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, ag economist from the U of I. Daryl Good joins us to talk a little bit about the corn market today. We'll start out by asking him about the carry.
Well, as we wind up the harvest or the growing season of the 2007, we've kind of put behind us some of the real worries that we might have a shortfall in production. And that's a worry as consumption grows so rapidly. But now it's time to start focusing on the 2008. If consumption of corn is going to continue to expand rapidly, driven by ethanol, we're going to once again need a very large crop in 2008. That means that the market is going to have to signal sufficient acreage of corn, whatever that is, probably need a bit more acres than we had in 2007. We're also going to need fairly good yields again in 2008 to keep all end users satisfied at reasonable prices. And so that kind of raises the question about what is our yield risk as we move forward. We've in the last 10 or 11 years, now 12 years, really have not experienced a significant shortfall in our U.S. average yield. 2002 was our closest, but everything else has been pretty close to trend yield for the last 12 years. And that's certainly not typical of history, where we periodically face major shortfalls in yield and production. And I think as we move into the calendar year 2008, we'll start thinking about that again and what kind of risk. And I think the market 2008-09 futures are going to have to start reflecting some of that uncertainty and the need for big crops. And I suspect that those premiums will remain, that we'll continue to see a large carry in the market from one crop year to the next, providing, again, some decent opportunities for pricing crops. But underlying all this is the likelihood that we're going to continue to see extremely volatile corn prices as we move forward, with supply-demand balance sheets remaining relatively tight and demand growing fairly significantly.
When you discuss volatility, how do you put that in terms of a cash price for corn and possibly its expansion, and what might the range be given the 25 or 30% increase in demand from ethanol?
Well, historically, when we look at the cash price of corn in any particular market, say Central Illinois, and you look at the range of the cash bid from harvest time through the following summer, so you kind of look at the 12-month marketing period, those daily bids would probably, from high to low, maybe you would see 60 or 70 cent range typical. Now, in drought years, you would see bigger ranges, but, you know, 60 or 70 cents was typical from high to low. I think at a minimum, we've probably doubled that. Clearly, 06, 07, a much bigger range. We started at $2 corn and went to $4. But I just think in terms of general expectations that expecting corn prices to trade in a dollar and a half range through a 12-month marketing year is probably going to be realistic.
So are we talking as low as 280 to 260 for the coming marketing year with a high of maybe $3.90, given what the USDA's national average cash price is?
I mean, that kind of range is, I think, reasonable. We can argue about where the low end and the high end is, but, you know, in the mid to upper $2 to the low $4 range is certainly within the realm of expectation.
So in this case, farmers are really going to have to take some risk, maybe that they're adverse to, because they won't know how much of a crop they've got, maybe even in the ground yet, and certainly how much it's going to yield. How is it that they go about protecting themselves?
It's really difficult. I mean, say on one hand, prices are higher than they have been historically and are probably going to stay higher, so that on one hand, you say it's harder to make a mistake, that you're going to have opportunities to sell at good prices, but it's not going to be any easier than it has been in the past, if in fact maybe more difficult if prices are more volatile. So I think you have to look at a combination of spreading sales, crop insurance, options. All of those things have to come into the arsenal in terms of managing the risk that's associated with this increased volatility.
Daryl, thanks much.
Thank you.
Daryl Good, Extension Ag Economist from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Mark Report on WILL. Time now to take a look at the cash market, and the folks out at the Andersons join us. Brian Stark from here in Champaign County on the line this afternoon. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the difference between nearby and deferred and your cash bids at this point.
Well, right now there's about a 30 to 35 cent spread. You look out from fall, the fall bid even to January, and it's almost 40 cents. So obviously there's a deference there, and that being with all this record corn crop that the state of Illinois is looking at, obviously we don't have enough space to go with it during the fall time frame. So there's clearly a decent carry in the market, incenting farmers to store on the farm as much as they can right now.
A carry in the market, but would you say there's, and I know this is tough when we're still trading in the $3 range, but would you say there's a premium in the marketplace as well yet?
Yeah, I would say that there's a little bit of a premium on the nearby versus the fall, only because the pipelines, as we thought here a month ago, towards the middle end of August, would start to run dry and the processor would go running trying to find coverage in between now and new crop. Now, when new crop starts, that's a universal question. We've heard corn advancing so, as far as dent stage already around south of Springfield. So obviously the maturation is ahead of schedule what we're used to, but, you know, a lot of the southeast end users are looking at the deep south corn, helping them kind of carry themselves through. But what size of a crop are we looking at down there? They ran into some dry weather early on, so the processor nearby basis has all of a sudden started to uptick, showing us a stronger interest or a premium, as you put it, for old corn to move, if there's any left, to cover their needs before fall.
You think there will be any larger premiums for early harvested corn this year as there has been in past years?
I think that there's a possibility. It just depends on the nature of the coverage and what area of the corn belt you're looking at. Depending on, I'm not as in tune with the deep south as far as the southeast chicken and hog guy, but I know that the Decatur's already starting to pop up their basis, and it may get to some small overs, I suppose, before we get to fall as far as a premium goes, but it just depends on when we all get rolling. But there probably will be some sort of a push in the nearby basis to cover them between now and fall.
What's the discussion like inside the Andersons as far as new facilities that have been built or storage either on farm or by elevators and commercials?
Well, I think obviously some commercials have added space over the course of the past year. As far as quantitating that, the only thing I can generally say is that we planted on average 19% more corn, and I know we didn't put up 19% more space. So it's like throwing a dart. I don't know what that percentage is. Obviously, commercials have probably been building more space as money's allowed. I know there's been a few co-ops in the area that have put up new 750,000 bushel bins. I know farmers have been trying to find the bin companies have been busier than all get out trying to get up as much space. So, you know, the attempts there, it's just to what extent. And I don't think we're putting up 19% more space to handle this crop. So.
And your bids for the day?
Today we are 308 for cash corn. Fall is 303. Cash soybeans, 780. Fall beans, 790.
Thanks much, Brian.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons here in Champaign County. Joins us on Monday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll check the ag weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. During an appearance in Chicago today, Governor Rob Blagojevich dismissed the claim that Illinois needs a budget in place by Wednesday to avoid financial harm to state employees and schools waiting for government aid. But Comptroller Dan Hines disagrees. He called Wednesday a true hardship date because that's when his office is supposed to start processing paychecks and school aid. Without a budget, the money may be delayed. The governor and state lawmakers are at an impasse over a budget for the fiscal year that began July 1st. A spokesman for the Army's Chemical Materials Agency says they will resume shipments of chemical wastewater from the processing of VX nerve agent from Indiana to Port Arthur, Texas for incineration sometime this week. There had been a temporary stay on shipments from the Newport Chemical Depot while a federal judge ruled on a motion by environmental groups to block them. The judge ruled against the motion last Friday. Champaign County Auditor Tony Fabry says county employees have no business using county funds to pay for in-town lunches. In a letter sent to department heads Friday, Fabry wrote that his office had already refused payment on a number of such lunches over the past month and asked that county employees reimburse the money taken from petty cash. Fabry says the county will reimburse employee meals during business trips out of the county, but not for regular lunches in town. The University of Illinois could be getting the world's fastest computer, but a spokeswoman for the U of I National Center for Supercomputing Applications says they can't confirm a story in today's New York Times. The newspaper cited documents accidentally placed on a federal government website briefly last week, saying that a $200 million supercomputer could be built at the U of I. NCSA spokeswoman Trish Barker says the university has one of a few bids for the computer, and that the National Science Foundation will make a final decision where to build it late this summer. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon. Hi, Mark.
Hello there, Todd.
Well, it's only 89 degrees outside the studios here, but the heat index is 101. And I don't suppose that's the only triple digit we see across the Midwest.
Right. The combination here of our heat as well as the very high dew points in place across much of the Midwest is creating those very high heat indices. And in fact, not only heat indices above 100 in numerous areas, but we're actually seeing the air temperature here reach almost the triple digits in areas of the southern Midwest and down into the northern Delta. And going forward, we're going to see much of that here coming up as the main heat is going to be across the southern half of the Midwest, extending down into the northern Delta, really through the rest of this week.
Southern Illinois will be getting very hot starting tomorrow.
It's ongoing right now, Todd, and that'll continue here as we go through the next 5-6 days.
So we're talking triple digits, 100, 101, 102 degrees?
Probably right around the century mark here. In general, you know, some areas will be 99, other areas will be 101, just kind of straddling the century mark here across those far southern areas of the Midwest.
Will they have enough humidity to push the heat indices way up as well?
Yeah, that will continue to be the case here with the very high dew points in place across the region. We're talking, you know, dew points in excess of 70, even a few areas around 80, 81, which for this time of year, let alone any time, this is pretty much the highest dew points, the highest moisture content that you can ever see here across the Midwest.
That puts what, indices at 110 degrees?
Exactly, in that kind of 110 range. It's obviously very, very impressive. But actually, just from an absolute standpoint, but this tends to happen at times here during this middle portion of summer. So not that uncommon at this time of year.
Tell me about the rest of the growing area.
Well, across the areas up north of the Midwest, we saw some good rainfall. In fact, in some areas that hasn't seen much rain over the past 4 to 5 weeks, in areas of the northern Corn Belt, specifically parts of southern Wisconsin, southern Minnesota, far northern Iowa, received some of the highest rainfall totals that they've seen in many, many weeks. And going forward, we see much of the same here. These areas of thunderstorms are going to continue to develop over the same areas, primarily biased across the northern portion of the Midwest. So that's the active spot here coming up over the next week, whereas the southern half of the Midwest remains mostly dry.
We appreciate you being with us.
Well, my pleasure, Todd.
All right, thanks much. That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Monday afternoons. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets on the pre-opening market report. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.